You do have to finish the opening statement. Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound. It's a bird, it's a plane, it's... Very good. You guys are as old as I thought you were. What is interesting to me when you look at those comic book styled heroes and cartoon heroes is the villain always seems to find out the Achilles heel of the hero. And no matter what hero you come across, there seems to be at least one thing that can just stop them in their tracks. When it comes to Superman, you have kryptonite. And I'm sure they've figured out what that is by now, but I know it's green, and that's about the best I know of kryptonite. Okay? But I do know that when Superman dons it, you know, goes into the booth and pulls off his shirt, and you get the big S there, all I know is you have to have this green gem, and you can stop the man in his tracks. That's what I know. And I think, what would I love to just stop? I'd love to stop all forms of cancer. I'd love to just stop them. I would. I would love to stop computer viruses. I would love to stop needless war. I would love to stop the enemy that seems to know my weaknesses. Jesus sets his face to Jerusalem. He is on his way to the cross. He is, and I really should have done next week's sermon today because of the timeline, but he is now leaving Jericho, heading up the hill to Jerusalem into what we would call Palm Sunday, the Sunday of the beginning of Passion Week, where he would be crucified later that week. And my question that I, when I was looking at all these roads that Jesus was on, is what causes Jesus to stop? Not be defeated, stop. That's not the stopping I'm talking about. But what causes Jesus when his face is set towards Jerusalem, when he knows what is before him, what would cause Jesus on that journey to the cross to stop? If you have a Bible, or if you'd like to follow along on the screen, let's go to Matthew chapter 20. Matthew chapter 20. It's the very last paragraph in Matthew chapter 20. And this story is told in Matthew and Mark and in Luke. And in fact, in Mark, we get the name of one of the two men. But Matthew tells it, puts it for us this way, beginning with verse 29. And as they went out of Jericho, a great crowd followed him, that's Jesus. And behold, there were two blind men sitting by the roadside. And when they heard that Jesus was passing by, they cried out, "Lord, have mercy on us, son of David." The crowd rebuked them, telling them to be silent. But they cried out all the more, "Lord, have mercy on us, son of David." The excitement was truly high. The time of year, we are talking right before the Passover. So there are thousands upon thousands that have come to Jerusalem. And in fact, because it is the week prior, as you're coming into Jerusalem, Jesus on that road from Jericho up to Jerusalem is probably not the only person making that trek. There's probably a lot of people out there making that trek up to Jerusalem. That sits high up on a hill. That's why no matter what direction you go to, you always go up to Jerusalem physically. As he is going, crowds are surrounding him. But it's the voice of two blind men that is heard. Now, I am convinced that these two men, being blind, having to beg for whatever they get, have probably positioned themselves along this roadside, which could be a very treacherous road, by the way. That's the story of the Good Samaritan. You know, he's on that road between Jerusalem and Jericho. I would guess that they positioned themselves there because so many people would be heading towards Jerusalem for the Passover that maybe they would get some alms for the poor. That maybe they would get a little extra at a time when they may have needed it. They existed solely out of the benevolence of others. But they heard Jesus was on that road at that time. And they cry out to Jesus with a messianic phrase. And by messianic, what I simply mean is they are making Jesus, they're using a phrase that would invoke concerning Jesus that he is the king that is coming. That he is the one who will reestablish the throne of David. That he is the one that would lead us out from the bondage of Rome and give us back our nation. That he would be the one that would be both priest and king, a spiritual leader, a political leader. And they cry out as they hear Jesus is on that road, Lord, have mercy on us, son of David. These blind men had 20/20 vision when it came to who Jesus was. They saw him for exactly who he was, the Messiah, and the power that would go along with it. Because this Messiah would be endued with power from God himself. So they cry out when they know it's Jesus. And I'm sure they have heard the stories of what Jesus has done, the healings of what Jesus has done. And so they cry out, Lord, have mercy on us, son of David. And the crowd says, hush up. Here's the point. The crowd sees themselves as more valuable to Jesus than these blind guys on the side of the road. Or, another way of putting it, these two blind guys on the side of the road have no reason to interrupt Jesus' journey. They are not worthy to interrupt that journey. I find it interesting it's not the disciples that tell them to be quiet. It's the crowd. So they are surrounding Jesus. Passion is high, excitement is high. And the crowd tries to say, be quiet. And all they know is they want the chance to speak to Jesus. So they cry out all the more, as in even louder. Don't tell me to be quiet, man. You ain't seen nothing yet. And we come to the next verse, verse 32. Just begins, at least in my translation. And stopping. Jesus stopped. You know, I know things that can defeat superheroes and cause them to stop in their tracks. Nothing in all creation can defeat God. So why would God in the flesh stop? He's on the road to the cross. He's got everything in front of him. And he stops. Jesus is doing exactly what he taught in the parable of the Good Samaritan. When you just think about the people in your own life, and you think about who are those people that, not just that you respect, but people that have really connected somehow to you. If you would think about the commonality for most of us, of what causes that, I would, and I know this is me guessing, but I would guess that it's something along the lines of somebody took notice of you when you needed it the most. And therefore, you have this deep, lasting respect for them. When my mom was dying all those years ago, and we were living in Pittsburgh, we were traveling back and forth. The church gave me a week, once a month, to go see my mom during that last few months of her pancreatic cancer. And so I would leave Pittsburgh and I would go to Indianapolis area where mom and dad lived. Our vehicles were never good vehicles. I mean, we had what we could afford, and what we could afford, we just prayed worked. And we were traveling to go see my mom in our minivan, which I do believe was demon-possessed, but that's beside the point. It broke down as much as it ran. And we were traveling over there. We got to Dayton, Ohio. So we're on 70, if you're familiar with the pathway at all. We got to Dayton, Ohio, and our van dies. I mean, done. It's a transmission problem. I call my dad, who his stress level is over the top. Mom is dying. And I say, Dad, is there anybody that can come to Dayton and pick us up? We are 2.5-3 hours from mom and dad's house. And he's like, I don't know anybody. I just don't know what to tell you. I mean, his stress level was high. I call back to Pittsburgh to one of our dearest friends. In fact, Carrie and I had dinner with his wife Friday night. And I'm just in tears. And I'm like, I don't even know what to do. He said, my sister lives in Indy. Let me call her and I'll get back to you. Calls me. He says, my sister and brother-in-law are on their way. They're coming to get you right now. I had met them one time in my life. They drive from Indianapolis to Dayton, Ohio. They pick up Carrie and I think we even had the kids with us. They pick us up and take us over to my mom and dad's. And I'm like, let me give you gas money. Let me help you out. Let me do something. No, they won't do anything. They drop us off at mom and dad's. And they say, now, I know that you have to go back on Saturday, and hopefully your car will be fixed because it was supposed to be done by then. We'll pick you up, and we'll take you back to Dayton to get your vehicle and make sure that it's still working for you. These are people I don't know. I will tell you, for now 15-plus years, they're like super high on my list of people that I respect. And I keep in contact with them off and on, mostly through Art's wife. He's passed away. When Art passed away, they were at the funeral. And it was one of the last later funerals I did when we were living in Pittsburgh. And they came to the funeral, and I just went up to them and I said, I just want to tell you again, I know it's been 10 years. I just want to tell you again how much I appreciated what you did for us when we were broke down in Dayton. And she said, I had totally forgotten about that. And I'm thinking, my whole life changed. I was able to spend days with my mom when I knew she was dying and only was going to have days. You allowed me time. And she's like, it was no big deal. We can drive over and pick you up. It was no big deal. It was a mammoth deal. My point is, how many of us take the time to stop for somebody else when our life is busy, chaotic, stressful? How many times can we, if you will, walk by on the other side? How many times can we justify all the things that are going on and that life is just so busy that we can't help out at this moment in time? I mean, I've been there, done that. Jesus is going to the cross. Jesus knows. He knows the burden that is on him. He knows what that week is going to be like. He knows what that ending of that week is going to be to him. And these two guys cry out, and Jesus stops. If there is any lesson for me in all of this, is that my availability is probably more important than my ability. My just being there is probably more important for the person who is hurting than me trying to fix all the problems, because I really can't do that anyway. And yes, life gets hectic for everybody. But the question is, are you willing to stop? That's what Jesus did. These two guys cry out to him, and he stops. I have tried to live my life, but especially since that time, being willing to stop, being willing to just sit with someone that is hurting, being willing to drive somebody that needs to get to a doctor's office, being willing to go see somebody that's in the hospital. It's not because it's my job. It's because that's what Jesus does. Therefore, as a follower of Jesus, that's what I do. I just stop. And people will say to me, and I get this all the time, oh, I know you're really busy. Of course, you know the next word. But could you help me out? And if you can't, I understand, because I know you're really, really busy. But you don't even have to throw it. You don't have to have the I know you're busy statement in there. Can I help? Let me help. Sometimes the way you get God in the flesh to stop, in fact, many times, is to cry out, I need help. Which is what we were doing in worship just earlier today. We always need just a little bit of help somewhere along the line. But finish out the rest of that sentence and into the rest of the passage. So beginning now back in where we left off. And stopping, Jesus called them and said, what do you want me to do for you? They said to him, Lord, let our eyes be opened. And Jesus, in pity, touched their eyes. And immediately they recovered their sight and followed him. When I think of those people who literally dropped everything and just drove almost 3 hours one way to pick me up, to drive another 3 hours back the opposite direction. I'm thinking, people don't do that. God people do that. That's who does that. People who have been touched by God do that. What makes God stop? Cry out. Just cry out. We often will do that when we're hurting the most. And we just lift ourselves up to God and say, God, I can't. I just can't. I can't fix this. I can't deal with this. This problem's way too big. I know you tell me that I can't have any more than I can handle. I'm just telling you, I can't handle it. Cry out. But there is also still God in the flesh. It's called your family of God that meets here. And that family of God becomes the hand, the feet, the mouth of God. And so when we cry out, the family steps in. Let me give you two other verses just to ponder as we bring this to a close. 1 John chapter 3, verse 18. Dear children, let us not love with words or tongue, but with actions and in truth, or deed and in truth. James 1 and verse 27. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this, to visit the orphans and widows in their affliction, and to keep oneself unstained from the world. So Jesus has told the story, the parable of the Good Samaritan and the people that pass by, and obviously the Good Samaritan is the one that stops. But when you come to the end of that story, it is set up because this lawyer is talking to Jesus and wanting to justify himself, he asked, who is my neighbor? So we get the story, the parable of the prodigal son. And then we come to the very end after Jesus tells the story. Jesus finished by telling the lawyer, or asking the lawyer, who was the neighbor to the man who fell among thieves? The lawyer answered, the man who showed mercy. I want you to listen to the final two words. A final phrase. Go and do likewise. Jesus is on the road to the cross, and he does exactly what he has been preaching. Going and doing likewise. I understand everything that gets set before us. But I will tell you, the best thing to do in life is to learn to be available. When your life is lived in such a manner that someone is fearful to ask you for help, fearful in the sense that they hate the imposition, I guess my question is, what have I left that person with? I would rather them think, who do I call when I need help? And say, I'm going to call Jeffrey. I'm going to call Noah. I'm going to call Krista. I'm going to call Elizabeth. I know who's going to help me. And yes, it's an imposition. We all get it. But what they see in God's people is someone who's willing to stop, no matter what's happening in life, to help. And that's what following Jesus does. Worry less about your ability and more about your availability. Become the servant that Jesus was. And the servant song becomes our mantra for how we then live life. So we sing, Lord, make me a servant. Make me like you. If we can serve you today, then won't you come as we stand and as we sing?